So we've looked for Star Wars-like planets that we can live on. We've figured out how we can get there. We've even calculated how much we'll age and how much our relatives are going to age while we're doing that. Well, now it's time to ask a physicist about what technology perhaps we can reasonably expect to see in the future. Ben Allanak is that man. He's a Cambridge University theoretical physicist. First off, Ben, can we ask you about the Force? Because this pervades all of the Star Wars story, doesn't it, the Force? And is there a parallel for that in the real universe?
Well, every Star Wars fan knows about the dark side of the Force. And indeed, there are dark forces out there in the universe. There is definitely dark matter, which makes galaxies rotate at a weird speed. So if you try and work out how fast the galaxy should rotate from laws of gravity, you get the wrong answer, basically, than compared to observing how fast they go around the outside.
Zwicky spotted this.
That's right.
A number of years ago, made the first observations of these galaxies spinning. The stars are spinning at the wrong speed compared with how much mass we knew was there.
That's right. So if you add a lot of extra mass that you can't see, that's the dark matter, then that makes it rotate faster on the outsides and agree with observations.
So we think that there is this bizarre force, which we're calling dark matter because we don't know what it is. It's in a big halo or at least some kind of distribution around the outsides of galaxies, and it's gravitationally influencing stuff in the galaxy. But beyond that, we don't know what it is.
Exactly. We know it's a particle because if it's something that's big, you should be able to see it gravitationally lens light in the sky. So you look for these massive compact halo objects, they're called, and you look for a lensing effect that moves across the sky, and that you don't see that enough to be a big thing.
So it has to be some small particle, and it won't interact with anything. It won't talk to us in light because it's dark. So how do we find it then? How do we try and interrogate it?
So it might not have interactions with light, but it might have interactions with the weak force, which is responsible for radioactive decay. And in that case, you could conceivably produce it at the Large Hadron Collider in the collisions there between protons.
How would you know you'd made it, though?
The protons have equal and opposite momentum. And then you look for a final state of after the collision, which is unbalanced in one direction. And you know that from school physics that, you know, momentum's conserved. And so if it's unbalanced, there's been something invisible going in the opposite direction. And the invisible stuff is precisely the dark matter, which takes the momentum off, yeah, and sneaks it off like a thief in the night through the detector.
Now, we know that we've got a dark side. There's the good side as well, isn't there? So is there a counterbalancing force?
Well, unfortunately, not that we know of, but there is another nefarious force, which is dark energy. That's something which is even more mysterious than dark matter. It's making space accelerate across the universe, weirdly. When we look at other supernovae a long way away from us, they're accelerating more than they should do. We know that, okay, everything's getting further apart. Space itself is growing because of the Big Bang. But there's an extra effect on top of that, this extra acceleration, and it's consistent with a small negative energy density of space itself. And it's making everything, you know, accelerate even further away.
But what's bizarre about what you're saying is that space is making more space, accelerated by this notional thing, dark energy. And when it makes more space, the space it makes has more dark energy to make more space and make more space expand more quickly. So it's like it's getting energy from nowhere then.
The energy is kind of hidden in there from the word go. Space itself, this is saying, has an energy. It's a negative energy, right? So in fact, you know, you've got to be careful about whether you're taking energy away or giving it to the system. So you're taking energy away by producing more space, but then that's pumped into the acceleration of planets and, you know, whatever, various galaxies on the edges of the universe.
You gave us a suggestion as to how we might be able to find dark matter. How are scientists trying to interrogate dark energy to discover its nature?
We look at the afterglow of the Big Bang. It's called the cosmic microwave background. It's all around us in the sky. And small variations in its temperature tell you about what was happening in the very early universe, because that light's travelled since, you know, just 100,000 years after the Big Bang. So since a long time ago. That light encodes some of the secrets of the universe. There's a technical thing. You can look at very particular bits of the light that have gone through a gravitational potential and then come out. You can do very precise measurements to see whether actually this acceleration was just to check whether it was happening. But actually getting to the nub of really what's causing it, I don't think we're very close to that yet. The work's all theoretical, and there aren't very many observational ways of telling the different theories apart.
As one theoretical physicist said, you have to be very cautious of maths and theoretical physics because you can prove anything you like on paper. Actually, it's whether or not it's really manifest up there in the sky that's a different matter. Wouldn't you agree, Katie?
I certainly would, yeah. We've got a few quickfire questions for you.
In episode 4, Luke Skywalker blows up the evil Death Star by shooting proton torpedoes from his X-Wing fighter. Are proton torpedoes a real thing?
Yeah, proton torpedoes are absolutely a real thing, and they exist in the Large Hadron Collider. You have lots of these bunches of about a billion protons. That there are 8,000 in each beam, in counter-rotating beams. And, OK, I don't know what you call a torpedo, but there's a length of them, a few metres long. And they're sent round at very close to the speed of light. You can't put your hand in the beam because it'd burn a hole through it.
So would it be possible to use as a weapon?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, you could do. If you fired this thing out in space, the protons would travel a long distance. The thing is, if you use it in the atmosphere, protons are going to, you know, lose energy pretty quickly. But it would still have a range. And yeah, if you could get enough power into the beam, it'd be pretty formidable.
People are using this clinically, though, aren't they, to do cancer therapy? Because you can fire a beam of protons into a tumour and they can be predicted in terms of how fast they'll slow down. And if they slow down and stop and dump all of their energy just in the cancer, they do a lot more harm to the cancer than the tissue around them.
That's right, yes. It's got advantages over conventional radiotherapy, where you get extra damage on the entry and exit of the body. It's not indicated for all cancers, but for, I think, particularly deep tumours, it's proved very useful.
So we've just got time for one more quick question for you.
Can I ever get my own droid, like R2-D2 or BB-8, to help me out with tasks around the house?
That's coming, I'm sure. We're getting self-driving cars. I think in the near future, there's going to be self-loathing cars. AI is all over everywhere. That's science fact. That's not science fiction.
Ben, thank you very much. And thank you to our other guests this week, who are Paul Rimmer, Liz Seward, Harry Cliff, and David Tricker.